Thank you.
Can we take a fourth? Is there any other? Josette, would you like to begin?
First, David, there's a lot of plans floating around. I like the specific structure that Ambassador Pickering has recommended, where we break it into the three subsections. I think the key, you know, the problem in the UN system is you pull together these days, and by the time every leader makes their three-minute comments, you haven't really had a chance to look strategically at how to move the ball forward. And so the question is kind of how do we pull people together in that kind of practical way? And I do wish we could take these recommendations and have a dialogue centered around them because they're very specific. And while some are U.S. specific, really we have a global challenge in how we make the system work better. Again, just to emphasize, what before was just a kind of a challenge to manage, all these cross-cutting different ways, and now is really life-threatening given the status of global markets. And so we do have some urgency, and I've made this appeal to every parliament in Europe. I just met with the heads of all the foreign affairs and eight development committees throughout the entire European Union and to the European Union itself, that we really, I need emergency flexibility. And this is a very specific ask, and it is impossible to manage this. I'm sure CARE needs it, Bread for the World and others, where we have to be able to do this. It's now not manageable in a way that won't have an effect on human lives. On the sovereign wealth funds, I do think Bob Zelik has recommended, in fact, what he called a 1% solution, where those investments go to the developing world, particularly in agriculture and other areas. I am intrigued by this issue of school feeding, only because if every child on earth who could simply afford it put, it's a quarter a day, in a cup for a kid that couldn't, you could end hunger among school children. You think about that, it's so doable and reachable. Maybe we can't overnight end hunger for all people, but if there's some way to harness, I think, the ability of the global economy to address something as simple that really should be, we should talk to our children and grandchildren and say, some kids used to go to school hungry, but today at least every kid has one cup of food. So this should be doable, and I think harnessing that. And I just want to point out one product, because I think part of the revolution, and I want to echo what you said from IFPRI, it's not just technology and agriculture. It's technology and nutrition. This is a product that we produce in India with chickpeas. It is power-packed with nutrition. It can be produced locally. And if a child eats this, it's a sweet paste, we can save them from malnutrition virtually overnight. This kind of smart technologies, we need somehow to inspire the world, to put the best minds of the world together in how we take food and make it easily accessible and deliverable with local products from countries to end the global nutrition calamity that we have. We have two-year-olds who will be crippled for life because they didn't get adequate nutrition. And it's not just producing food, but it's accessible food. This doesn't have to be refrigerated. It doesn't require water. And this WFP just invented in India, getting support from local companies and others. But if we could unleash the world to say, what are the targeted products that can revolutionize nutrition for the world's poorest citizens and are accessible and can be produced locally, that's a revolution that will save lives and change lives. On tariffs and subsidies, I will tell you that right now we're in reversal. We have countries, 30 countries that are blocking all sales, exports of agriculture. And the world, I think, is in a big debate over whether we will retreat into national security or we will have a global food system that works, that can be trusted. But we shouldn't underestimate how core this debate is right now, with many countries saying like Senegal and others, that we depended on global trade to be able to access food, and now they can't buy it. And you've seen the Philippines and others not be able to buy it. So we have countries retreating into hoarding, into panic buying. And so we need global leadership. Doha's the place to do it. And if we're going to send the signal that we're going to have confidence in an open global trading system, we have to get serious about it now. I go all over the world and I meet people who are really believing they cannot rely on a global system for food right now. And so a big signal needs to be sent very quickly on that.
On the question around the way that we went about doing making our recommendations, we did get agreement in both the findings and the recommendations to some very strong language that admitted the grave imbalance and distorting impacts of the current system and calling for major reductions in subsidies and tariffs. I think we also came out of this process internally, at least, with the sense that there was a lot more work that needed to be done on these issues, that we were in time that we had set for ourselves, it was simply not possible to carry forward. And in our deliberations around if we stay in this space, what would the priorities be, the top priority has been to do a lot more careful thinking around global markets and around tariffs and trade approaches that would become more concrete and specific. And I take your point. And I think if we, it's like when Vince Lombardi said, you know, you never lose a football game, you just run out of time. Well, that was sort of what happened with us on this particular matter, but I take your point. I think we've exhausted ourselves. I want to apologize to those who had to stand throughout this, that we did not have space for everyone, and I'm thankful to all of you for enduring this. Josette, thank you so much for all of your leadership and the time, and thank you all for being with us this morning.